Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stephen Nill, CEO of CharityChannel.com. So, you want your charity to succeed? You came to the right place. Integration of online and offline techniques is the key to your successful fundraising, and practical advice on going green is what you need. With this show, The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, you will learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Our host is Ted Hart, one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. This year, he is celebrating 25 years in the nonprofit sector and the 10-year anniversary of his firm, TedHart.com. His books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. His guests are leaders in their field who will share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management, green strategy, and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, here's Ted.
And good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, May 17th. You are live with The Nonprofit Coach. This is Ted Hart, your host. I want to start off with kind thoughts, prayers, and thoughts for those who are suffering from all the floods throughout the country. That's mindful to me today here in the Washington, D.C. area. We are scheduled to have very strong storms today and lots of rain, and I know that will not even come close to comparing to the floods that so many people in the middle of our country are dealing with right now. I've been in contact with several nonprofit organizations who have been keeping me apprised of how they are doing. Thankfully, all the groups that we work with are doing well right now, but there are lots of concerns for lots of people. So please keep all the fine people who are struggling with all of the rain and all of the floods foremost in your mind. Again, this is The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart. As always, you can call in to the show at 347-324-3080. Make sure that you press the number 1 so that I know in the switchboard that you would like to ask a question of our page 2 expert. When we get to page 2 today, we have Chris Cannon. Chris Cannon will be joining us on the show today. He is the author of An Executive's Guide to Fundraising Operations. So this is a very key show today about how you can be efficient and effective and understand what are the business practices that you need to be following for success within your organization. As always, here on The Nonprofit Coach, you can also join us over in the chat room. I see folks arriving over in the chat room, and you can always email me during the show at tedhart@tedhart.com. But those of you who are familiar with The Nonprofit Coach radio show, as always, you know we start the show off with page one news. And this is Ted Hart here back on page one. And for page one news today, we do have from the IRS confirmation of audits of advocacy group donors. I think this is important for nonprofit organizations who are involved with advocacy to understand that there is a little known provision, rarely invoked provision of the IRS tax code that for those making gifts of more than $13,000 to advocacy groups are subject to gift taxes of up to 35%. In its work plan for 2011, the IRS did note that it planned to step up enforcement of these rules. So it's important that we understand the rules that we are under. Such organizations that are classified under 501c4 IRS tax code designations spent millions of dollars on political ads. And I do think it's important in that 2010 election cycle, what we saw is a big uptick in political use, I believe, of nonprofit organizations. And I don't always consider that to be a healthy thing, whether you're on the left or the right or blue or red or whatever. I don't think that nonprofit organizations should be the volleyball of the political sector. The next story that we have here on The Nonprofit Coach and I'm not sure that this is completely unrelated, is that the Koch brothers, the Charles G. Koch Foundation, over in the Chronicle Philanthropy, has announced that they have made a $1.5 million grant to Florida State University. The concern here is that the university granted them influence over faculty hiring in consideration of that gift. Well, this is a big concern. Now, the university president says, well, not any undue influence on hiring. But again, I think certainly those of you who follow political sectors know that the Koch brothers are heavily involved with conservative politics, very much looking to use their money in whatever way they can to influence policy. And here, just like the first story on the nonprofit coach today, we're seeing, again, influence in the nonprofit sector of a political nature. And this was specifically to influence the hiring of economics faculty at the Tallahassee campus of Florida State University. So read all about these radio links and all of our radio links today over at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. You'll be able to follow along with all of our radio links here today. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, again, another story here from the nonprofit, the Chronicle of Philanthropy. At the Chronicle of Philanthropy, they are reporting and wondering, sort of musing, whether or not robots are the future of fundraising. Now, before you start getting concerned about your job, and concerned about whether or not you're going to be replaced with a robot. I don't think so, not necessarily, not right away anyway, but I do think that that what is happening here, and this is sort of an interesting story that Nicole Wallace has written regarding the use of a computer robot that was designed by a student at the University of Dundee in Scotland, where this little robot maneuvers around and it doesn't move until it gets money put into it. So it's more of sort of a fun game sort of thing, and that's what they're using over in Scotland, and it's being used in a couple of different areas. There's a nice video over, and it's called Donator, Donator, and you can read all about that. Now, one in particular, during the time that the robot collected money at the Dundee Science Center, only collected $43, so I don't think a particularly successful fundraiser is Donator, but read all about it. Just sort of a fun techno approach to fundraising. So next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is, again, you'll find this over in the radio links at tedhart.com. Click on radio links, and we have a report from the Association of Fundraising Professionals. This organization has just completed their annual salary survey, and after significant increases in 2009, salaries for charitable fundraisers in the United States and Canada in 2010 reflected the general economic conditions and were flat or were down. What they're reporting here is that the charitable fundraising salaries have stabilized across North America after those previous increases. U.S. average salary respondents decreased by less than 1% to approximately $76,000 average pay in the United States in 2010, with an average pay in Canada of now some $78,000. And of course, with the Canadian dollar being strong, it's those Canadian fundraisers that are making out on the better end of the deal, according to the Association of Fundraising Professionals annual survey. And if you're a member of AFP, you can actually access the full report on the link available at tedhart.com click on the radio links, apologize for that, click on the radio links, and you will be able to download the 2011 report if you are a member of AFP. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is a report or a notice from Facebook Causes. Facebook Causes has recently launched a new Facebook page, a tab that helps nonprofits inspire their online supporters to give. More than 700 nonprofits have adopted the tab in the first week, indicating just how excited nonprofits are about the peer-to-peer fundraising of Facebook. Now, a little bit of caution here as we continue to caution. Facebook, of course, we think is important to the nonprofit sector, but is not the most important approach to social networking. We do think that your website, LinkedIn, and GuideStar are far more important online services that you need to be utilizing right now than to be looking at Causes, Facebook, and even Juno beyond that. But we do think that if you're going to be on Facebook, you should be outfitting it with all of the services that are available. And that's why we're providing you with a link to the Causes tab for Facebook pages that is now available over at tedhart.com. Click on radio links, and today you will find all the information that you need to add the new causes tab for Facebook over for nonprofit organizations. So don't miss out on the opportunity to make sure that you've got the correct information. So next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is just a little bit of a shout out. If you are following us over on LinkedIn, again, speaking about social networking, we do believe that LinkedIn is a much more important strategy right now for nonprofit organizations utilizing social networking right now. And that is because of who is on the LinkedIn service, and that is the folks over at LinkedIn are hosting with us the people-to-people fundraising LinkedIn group. And the shout-out today is to all of the members of the people-to-people fundraising LinkedIn group. And we've got 1,137 members as of this moment. You can join that group by going to the P2P fundraising website, and in the upper right-hand corner you will find a link to the LinkedIn group, and you can join right there. All you have to do is be a member on LinkedIn. So next up here on the Nonprofit Coach is information, very important information, I think, from Google. There is, and those of you who have been to some of my lectures recently have heard all about the new Google for Nonprofits program, and we want to make sure that all the listeners of the Nonprofit Coach have that updated information, so let's take a listen.
Every day, millions of people are online, many of whom want to help, volunteer, and donate to a good cause. Nonprofit organizations can use many Google tools to reach potential donors around the world and raise more money. And as an approved nonprofit, it doesn't cost a thing. It's all free. Google Grants helps you promote your website with free advertising on Google.com through the AdWords program. With Google AdWords, you create ads and choose words or phrases related to your nonprofit organization. When people search on Google using one of your phrases, your ad will appear next to the Google search results under the sponsored link section. AdWords allows you to target certain geographic areas, dates, and times of day for your ads to appear. YouTube for Nonprofits is another tool that can boost donations to your organization. The program offers a number of perks that get your message out there and drive viewers to take action and donate. You can list your organization on YouTube's nonprofit channel and add call-to-action overlays on your videos to drive viewers to donate. Need help analyzing your website traffic and marketing effectiveness? Google Analytics is a free tool that will give you rich insight and help you increase the number of people that visit and donate to your site. Google Analytics can be invaluable to many people in your organization, such as development directors, marketing staff, and your web team. There are many other tools that can help you reach more donors and raise funds, like Google Checkout, where you can process credit card donations with no transaction fee, Google Sites to create a free website, and Website Optimizer, where you can figure out the best landing pages to turn site visitors into donors. To get started, apply for Google for Nonprofits today.
it's important that nonprofit organizations understand where the tools are, and google.com/nonprofits is an important new set of tools that are available, particularly for smaller nonprofits, but not exclusively for smaller nonprofits. Check it out, apply today, and make sure that your organization is benefiting from all of the various services that are available on the web. We continue to be very impressed with the folks at Google who have taken so much of their time and effort and treasure to put together a grouping of charitable services and tools that are available for nonprofit organizations. Again, check that out at google.com/nonprofits. As we start looking forward to page two expert today, as I mentioned before, we do have Chris Cannon, who is our expert today on page two. He will be joining us live, and so can you, by calling in to 347-324-3080. Press the number one to raise your hand to let us know that you are interested in asking a question. There is some indication that there might be a problem with the call-in line today. Have no fear. You can also join us over in the chat room at tedhart.com and click on the radio links, or you can just email me your question at tedhart@tedhart.com. Next up here on page one news is just an early notice. Mark your calendar, buy your greeting cards. What will you be doing on Social Media Day? Social Media Day is presented by Mashable. You can find out all about it and find a local celebration near you by going to tedhart.com, clicking on radio links, and you can find all the information that you need to help you celebrate on June 30th and gather together with other social media enthusiasts. And this, of course, is sponsored by Mashable. And there will be a number of meetup sites all throughout the world. We can see a number of them on the map in North America, Europe, in the Middle East, Asia, Australia, and I also see it looks like there's one over in Africa as well. So plan early and join the global movement for social media by celebrating Social Media Day on June 30th. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, as we look to wrap up our page one news today, is a really strong shout-out to Jonathan Grapsis. Jonathan has done a really terrific job, and we're providing you a link to his blog where he has done an analysis of the Greenpeace UK website. And this is really terrific, because one of the reasons why I think it's terrific is because it follows very much a lot of the tenets that we talk about on this show in terms of what's important for your nonprofit website to succeed. And I like how succinct he is in saying that your website needs to be focused, it needs to be clean, it needs to be easy to use and easy to navigate, and it needs to have a feel that it matches the mission of your organization. This is nicely done, and take a look around Jonathan's blog as well. He's got some good stuff there. Bravo, keep up the good work. Jonathan Grapsis, and thank you for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach with your blog and sending that along. Don't forget, here on the Nonprofit Coach, every week here on Tuesday, we always start off with page one news. That page one news is put together from people all over the world who email us their favorite links and stories that they think should be covered here on the Nonprofit Coach. If you come across a news story or have a report that you think is relevant to the nonprofit sector, then it is relevant here on the Nonprofit Coach. Send that along to tedhart@tedhart.com. We'll analyze that, and our producers will put it in the show, the next appropriate show, if they feel that that is a good match. That is our page one news today. I want to thank everyone for joining us, and as always, when we wrap up page one, we move right on to page two. Over here on page two today, we have Chris Cannon, CFRE, and it matters that he's CFRE, An Executive's Guide to Fundraising Operations, Principles, Trends, and Tools is his book, as was announced last week by Susan McDermott over at John Wiley & Sons. This is a book that is part of the AFP Wiley radio or a book series, and therefore he is our guest here on today, being AFP Wiley Radio Day. Chris Cannon counsels higher education, healthcare, and other clients around the world on strategies to improve fundraising. He focuses on fundraising operations so that his clients can leverage resources and processes to raise more money. As a managing associate at Brenswelly Flessner's Advanced Services Practice, Mr. Cannon, areas of expertise include strategic planning, fundraising systems, operations, staffing issues, database and technology management, business intelligent reporting. In other words, this guy just knows his stuff. He's got lots going on. He is the author, as I said before, of The Executive's Guide to Fundraising Operations. As I said over on page one, this is a very important show because this is about being efficient. This is about getting it right and understanding how your office should run. We've got the expert on that topic, and welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Chris Cannon.
Thank you, Ted. I appreciate being on the news hour here. Can you hear me okay?
It's great. Yeah, I can hear you fine. You're coming in loud and clear. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is, of course, an important show for us in that once a month we have a partnership with the AFP Wiley Book Series, and this is AFP Wiley Radio Day. You are our guest today, and you've written a very important book that has been praised in many different sectors because of the depth of knowledge that you bring to the nonprofit sector. Tell us a little bit about why you felt the sector right now, and certainly maybe why you thought AFP Wiley Book Series chose to designate you as one of the key components of learning in the nonprofit sector by writing this book.
Sure, and first I should say I'm humbled that AFP selected the topic in the book, and secondly that they chose me to write on this topic area. There are lots of experts around the country, plenty of folks that I around the world really, plenty of folks that I've met with and learned from, and so this is a bit of a group project. Although I fortunately have my name on the byline for the book. You know, the background in this, Ted, I think is the confluence of a few things. On the one hand, we have fundraising increasing, despite the Great Recession and so forth, $300 billion or more in the U.S. Generated through philanthropy, increased professionalization and sophistication of fundraising efforts over the last few decades. And while all of that's been happening and more $100 million plus gifts and so forth have been coming in the doors of some of the biggest nonprofits in the world, we also have tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of new nonprofits that exist compared to even a decade ago. And then the last issue is we have this amazing technology and backdrop of things like Twitter, things like Skype. You know, when I look at how impressively you've worked the Nonprofit Coach into all of the different channels, I know I need to do more myself, right? And I do this every day of the week. There are just so many technology options available. So given all of that, given all of those, the confluence of those three things, the thing that I find over and again is that operations within fundraising can be an Achilles heel of some of our nonprofits. And this is for small and medium and large. This is for healthcare and higher ed and social services and educator, environmentally focused nonprofits. It is ideally something, and this is a metaphor I use throughout the book, ideally, it's something that spins like a top, and it spins so well and so smoothly that the executive director, the president, the chief development officer can go out and meet with board members with confidence and not worry and not have that nagging feeling that something back in the office is maybe not going so well. So that was the crux of this is I believe that AFP saw that operations is an issue because there are so many more nonprofits, there's so much more fundraising, and there's so much more technology and just business process overall, sophistication, if you will, to throw at how fundraising occurs, that we needed to have some work that would help parse out what's important and what's not. And if I may, real quick, I'll just tell you one funny story to me was that the good folks at AFP really initially had wanted to title this A Complete Guide to fundraising operations, and I push back on that because I'm not sure there's enough paper in the world to have a complete guide on fundraising operations. It's a complex area, and I just wanted to provide what I hope are some timeless ideas on how fundraising operations could be most readily addressed by executives so that they can go out and raise more money.
And I think that is important. One of the things that I was struck by your book, and I do want to come back to your comments on social media in just a second, but when I was reading your book, which is excellent, and our listeners should definitely go to Amazon or to the AFP website to get a copy of this book as soon as they can. I found it interesting that both in the beginning of the book in chapter two, and then later on in some of the later sections where you were talking about tools for fundraising in chapter seven, that you always led in the same way. You led with data and then talked about technology. And in both instances, it was exactly the same. And of course, I happen to agree with you, but why did you choose to lead with data and follow with technology?
Sure. One of the things, and it's a central tenet throughout the book and throughout all of my work in this profession, is that we need to make sure that the means and the ends are in the right place. And in many cases, our relationships with our donors, the donors themselves, what we know about them, that's a little higher toward the ends than it is a means to an end. And the technology in many cases is more so a means to an end, which is changing some. And I'm a dinosaur here, but the social media is certainly changing that a bit. And here's what I mean by the means and ends being in the right order. The technology that a small nonprofit has will not necessarily be as sophisticated, and it shouldn't be, as, say, a Big Ten university. Yet the data that they need is relatively identical. It's who are they, how do you contact them, why do they care about your organization, how have they behaved, and what sorts of giving and event attendance and advocacy behavior have they exhibited. Those things are preeminent no matter if you're an international organization with 100 offices or a three-person shop in St. Louis, Missouri, really working all ends of the entire spectrum of the development shop. So that's the reason that I drive data, that I put data first, is that I think data is not exactly an end of itself, but it represents the ends, it represents the donors and what we know about them, or the prospects and what we'd like to know more about them. And the technology is a tool to poke and prod and massage how we build those relationships and ideally raise more money.
Well, and I appreciate how you've really put the focus on relationships, because there always seems to me in any clients that I work with that there's two sides to technology, and I'm not sure that the average nonprofit necessarily gets either side right, because they're so focused on the technology itself. What did I buy? Do I own this company's software versus this company's software, as opposed to really taking a step back in terms of what do we want this software to accomplish, and then find the right solution. Because while there are really some very high-end expensive software solutions, and there are some low-end and even free solutions that are available, I don't think that any of them have a lock on the market as being the right choice for every single charity. I think that there is a right choice, but it needs to be a thoughtful consideration. And what I mean by two sides of it, and I'd like you to reflect on this as it relates to your notion of relationship building, is there's the data that you have, or the data that you're collecting on the donor, that needs to be readily available and also connected to the relationship that you're looking to build. But then there's also the data of all those prospects that you don't have relationships with, and how do you overlay that on your fundraising plan. And I think, I don't know if it's just getting overwhelmed with data or not necessarily understanding that at the heart of it is the relationship, not just the data itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And as an example, in the healthcare field, since the passage of HIPAA and the allowance of using grateful payer, patient contact data in a HIPAA-compliant way to build relationships, one of the things that we see over and again is that there are some successful, maybe less personal, more direct response-focused programs out there around the country, for sure. But the ones that really seem to have leveraged all of that data, and in some cases, the big academic medical centers, we're talking maybe 250,000 new constituents a year, hypothetically. The ones that have sifted through and found the right couple hundred we're also not just doing direct response activities, but at very people-driven strategies, and typically things like physician referrals where the physicians are comfortable with that, or an opportunity to be in person, you know, in the cafeterias and maybe even on the floors of the different hospitals around the country. So to your point, there are all of these data points and there's all of this noise. And one of the things that I really hope that this book does, and really my counsel over and again, and perhaps a few folks might call in and confirm this on the phone, my counsel has simply been that we have to set it and forget it. We have to train people and trust them to do their job. We need the floor, the foundation of the data, the technology, the process to work so well that you can look up and out towards your donors, your best donors, towards your best prospects, towards your board members, because that you know, 4,000th data point on a person, you know, number 4,000 in your asset screening will probably never be visited unless they already had a relationship, right? And, you know, maybe they'll get to the first couple thousand if you're a pretty big shop. So there's all this data and all this noise, but I think the crux is how do you integrate some people-focused fundraising and strategies while never losing sight of the fact that through data mining and other things, you might learn something, you might be able to seize on an opportunity. But one of the key messages in this book and overall for operations is that data shouldn't be for data's sake, right? Data ought to be the relationship. It ought to tell you the story. And if you can leverage that story and build a relationship and raise more money, that's why most of us are on the phone today.
Yeah. Well, and that's what really struck me about this book, and that's why I wanted you to be on this show, because you get it. And I think that there's not a lot of folks out there who get the fact that just because there is a lot of data and you have access to unprecedented amounts of data as a fundraiser now, I mean, there's never been a time in the history of fundraising that you've had access to so much information, but it shouldn't be overwhelming. And I think that because there is so much information, we lose sight of the fact, and the point that you just made, is that the successful operations are those who are able to data mine and prioritize who they should be talking to, as opposed to data mining for the purpose of just getting bigger and bigger lists. How many people can I email? How many people can I direct mail? And that is not the path to successful relationship or people-to-people-based fundraising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I may switch directions a little bit on this similar vein in terms of count and head count and that sort of thing, one of my colleagues, Justin Ware, who's a real expert in social media, he and I have been talking quite a bit about Twitter in particular and what do followers mean and how do you engage folks and is it better to have 10,000 followers yet nearly no interactivity or 500 followers and lots of conversation? He uses conversation quite a bit as a way to differentiate between you have this many followers, you have this many fans on your Facebook page versus how interactive is that? And that gets at this issue between the ends and the means. The means are Twitter's fantastically powerful. Facebook is dominant in a way that is a little bit challenging. I write in the book about where did MySpace go? Sorry for those of you who like MySpace, but they've lost market share at an alarming rate.
Now you're dating.
So the reality is that Facebook and Twitter will probably be around for a decade. But boy, I mean, the technology moves so fast and the opportunities are so fast. And you could, therefore, using this technology, have thousands and thousands of quote-unquote friends or followers. But what does that mean? And how do you actually engage those people and convert them into not just followers but donors, not just donors but people who might give you a planned gift in 30 years?
Exactly. And what is that step-by-step process? And what I want to – we're going to take a little bit of a station break here, Chris. And when we come back, I wanted to explore a little bit further this notion of fundraising operations and how it relates to what you refer to as trends, fads, and staying ahead of the curve. And how important is that to fundraising operations, or is this really just a meat and potatoes kind of business? We'll be right back after the break. We want to thank the wonderful folks over at Geronimo.com. If you have not checked out Geronimo.com, make sure that you do. You can find the link over at TedHart.com. Click on radio links. Geronimo.com is a totally new concept for nonprofits. Geronimo links your organization to the highest quality vacation rentals in the world. It's simple. Your donors book one of the vacation rentals that Geronimo provides free of charge to your organization. The owner has already agreed to donate 50% or more of the rental to your organization. The folks at Geronimo.com have already done that work for you. You don't have to go out and find these great rentals. They've already done it for you. If silent auctions or live auctions has been successful for you, you're going to love Geronimo. So start turning spare weeks into big donations. All you do is ask your donors to book their next vacation at Geronimo.com. All vacation rental owners that have posted to Geronimo.com, so when you go to Geronimo.com, those are live opportunities. They've already agreed to donate at least half of the rental, sometimes more than half of the rental, to charitable organizations, and that could be your organizations. What a great concept. Spare weeks become big money for your organization. Visit Geronimo.com to learn how you can unlock big donations. Please ask about the private label solutions that feature your logo, the logo of your organization, your look and feel. Really terrific job over at Geronimo.com. These are folks with a lot of experience in the real estate market. They know where the best rentals are, and they're making them available to the nonprofit sector. Check it out over at Geronimo.com, or you can also go to the radio links, like all of our other links, and you'll find it highlighted today as our highlighted website of the day over at TedHart.com. Click on radio links, and we're going to head back to the show. Chris, we're back, and I want to talk to you more about fundraising operations and where sort of these cutting-edge opportunities really fit into good operations. I tend to look at topics like social media and all the other changes about the website and the internet as efficiency-building tools, but for some of our senior executives who have been around for a while, quite honestly, for a lot of their career, and I mean decades of their career, there wasn't an awful lot new, maybe a new database here or there, but it was sort of slow to come to technology. And now all of a sudden everything's moving so fast and you've got all of these offers and all these suggestions and everything seems to be affecting everything else. What is fundraising operations today? What's sort of that meat and potatoes?
Yeah, so kind of two ways to answer this, and the fundamental way is that I look at operations as through this metaphor of a spinning top, and in that top, the post, right, the spinner, the thing you hold on to spin, are your people. The better your people are in anything, the better. You need to have folks that understand what they do, that care, and that try hard and do a good job. On top of the spinning top, you have things like your data. How much do you know about folks? What don't you know, and should you? You have technology, and that might be your donor management system, but it could also be your online community. It could be lots of other types of technological issues that certain organizations need, and some don't. Third, I find that reporting and getting data out of those two things through your technology of your data is vitally important if you're an executive. The better your reports, fundamentally, the more you have confidence in the rest of the operation. So if you're listening to this and you're an operations professional wondering how can you improve the perception of your work, start with reporting. And then the fourth issue, which can be enormous, but I tend to view it as a series of processes and program support. Gift processing is always in operations. The opportunity to do donor stewardship and donor relations may or may not be prospecting. Prospect development tends to be data maintenance overall, and then, of course, report creation and all of these other parts that I sort of mentioned that have a process to them. So fundamentally, the meat and potatoes part is if you're an executive or if you're an operations professional, if you're vocationally drawn to philanthropy and you thought of your organization's operations as a spinning top, how does it spin? Does it worry you? Is the top wobbling because maybe the data are too light and you just don't know enough? Maybe your technology isn't very well utilized. Maybe it's actually the table that it's spinning on, right, the environment. Maybe the environment is slanted and bumpy. I joke occasionally, maybe the environment is on fire. And that obviously has an impact on your operations. But if you think about those are the meat and potato components of all operations. And the one-person shop to the 1,000-person shop dealing with advancement, fundraising, development, they all have to deal with those issues. The additional way to look at the, you know, sort of beyond the meat and potatoes, I think gets to your important question about, you know, how do you develop efficiency from or usage of these new tools and trends. And that's where my typical advice is get your top spinning well enough that then you can slowly add these new things on. And where I see organizations that have really succeeded with, say, having apps for events, it's because they're already pretty confident that they know how their donor database holds gifts. So they don't have to worry about those things, and they've been able to move on and move up and add to that.
So using your top metaphor, sure. What are the topics, specifically thinking in terms of your terrific book and the trends, fads, and staying ahead of the curve topics that, you know, so many executives really have to tackle these days, what does that do to your perfectly spinning top?
Well, I think what it does is it takes those things are, for lots of organizations, critical, mission critical, and going to continue to be. But for a fundraising executive, often the development and the initial application of those tools is a bit of a distraction. And what I mean by that is that, you know, take any great new social media tool like a Twitter. If the major gift officers, if the operations teams, if the event teams are trying to figure out how to get messaging out, you know, annual giving and that sort of thing, and creating these conversations among your constituents, that certainly is a good idea. If your chief development officer is not meeting with the board chair today so that he or she can delve into new tools should work like a Twitter, I find that just the wrong way to apply resources. So what I'd love to see is a fundraising executive that's willing to delegate these interesting, potentially really valuable new tools and say, I need to be disciplined and focused on probably about 100 people who are going to give the vast majority of our money this year, that are going to make the vast majority of policy and administrative decisions on behalf of the organization that I'm so committed to, and give me an update. Give me a show and tell. Let me participate, but not as someone who is driving decisions, because I think that the meat and potatoes, again, of fundraising operations are relatively straightforward. And so far, so are the meat and potatoes of fundraising. Meaning, and you make this point, Ted, over and again, which I think it could never be said too often, it's people-to-people fundraising needs to happen. And you can do some of that in the social space, but there aren't a lot of million-dollar gifts coming in through social media, not yet. I found it interesting, for example, when Mark Zuckerberg announced his $100 million gift, he did it in person, right? There were some tweets about it. There was some Facebook information about it, but he wanted to do that wonderfully generous experience live and in person. And I don't think there are lots of donors who in the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 figure range that are yet too comfortable making purely online, digital relationship giving. I think is important. I'm not convinced that the fundraising executive can I'm not convinced that they can be distracted yet by some of these new tools. And instead, they should be ideally fed a steady diet of here's how we could apply this strategically, what do you think, and be able to weigh in and not develop, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think it is all about the timing and the phasing and how you're utilizing this in an overall strategy as opposed to sort of the shotgun approach. And what I see a lot in the questions that I get asked are sort of bolting on Twitter and bolting on Facebook and hoping that just by saying I've got a page or yes, I tweet, but I don't really have a strategy and what that means, that somehow that's going to generate something of good to the organization. And it's not likely to. It needs to be part of an overall strategy. We do have an email question that just came in from Leslie in Toronto, and she's wondering where stewardship fits into all of these discussions.
Good question, Ted and Leslie. I write about this in the book. I almost always tend to include it in operations and almost all of my colleagues in a stewardship role around the country and in Canada and Australia and Lebanon don't. They tend to view it as more of a major giving activity. And so where I tend to draw the line on this is we have three types of things that operations can have an impact on in kind of decreasing order. The high tech is certainly operations in terms of maybe using online pages to thank donors or to engage donors related to their own giving. And I'm thinking of honor rolls and things of that nature that, that you might put on the web. A second would be high volume, and those tend to be, I consider, for example, gift receipts to be the first step in a long line of stewardship steps, and that tends to be within an operational purview. The third is high touch, and that's where the stewardship folks tend to really have a position of, well, we're not exactly operations because we mostly do high touch. I think the most important, it's a hard way to put it, but probably the most impactful work of a stewardship team is in the high touch, but the highest volume and most work is actually in these high volume and high technology areas, getting essentially all of the other details for gifts, say, below whatever the number is, $1,000, to spend like a top. So you can spend lots more time on $1,000 or more gifts. And so it's a funny point because in the book I made it clear that this is my opinion. I tend to treat stewardship as an operational component, but it certainly has so much relationship building and in-person, personal touch, high-touch activity that I can certainly see where lots of organizations have it in, reporting to the major giving team and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but I tend to agree more with you, which is probably why I like this book, in that, you know, stewardship tends to be viewed as only a small segment of the donor base is really do stewardship. And I think it's much broader than that. And I do think that social media provides a lot of opportunities to draw attention to those good acts of philanthropy and to provide an extra measure of stewardship to the gift, and not just in an honor roll sort of listing way, but in much more of a human way where content can be provided that can actually be shared throughout social networks. And I think where a lot of charities go wrong with social networking is they view it all about what am I posting, how mm-hmm. am I utilizing these tools, as opposed to thinking more broadly about how might our donors and a broader market view our information, how might that be shared?
Sure, and to that point, I took a look at about 10 academic medical centers around the U.S. this week on their Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube video content, and it was Ted, you're the expert here, but I'll just tell you what I experienced was that the places that seem to have lots more friends, lots more followers, and lots more views tended to be very much a here's content you can use, and not very much a here's our marketing content just displayed in a different medium. And so to your point, I think that the conversation and that interactivity is one of the critical ways that donor stewardship can leverage social media tools and not have it simply be we'd like to invite you to an event, but to use social media as a way to ask them what they'd like to see in the event, or ask, you know, give them, in, you know, very simple in for a lot of organizations to improve the online event registration experience so that you actually know who's showing up, which is always a hard thing to get folks to tell you. But if you can encourage people to tell you this and give them a reason to, then that event would just be more meaningful, and then you'd have something to do with the data after the event and after that great experience that they have through stewardship.
Exactly, and I'm not surprised with what you've learned. I think that there's so much of a fear about what social media means and how I can't control it that it kind of comes in a couple of different forms. One is I'm going to ignore it and hope maybe it'll go away because I don't really understand it. Another is I'm going to really lock it down and we've got to control it. The other is we're just going to be very passive, as opposed to really kind of being a mix in that social media requires you to be social too. It can't just be the information you want others to use. You need to be willing to pay attention and engage. And if you don't, that's okay, but you're not going to benefit from social media. There really isn't a halfway house for charities who kind of sort of want to be social, because the whole nature of Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and all the various social networking is that those who are proficient, those who could become your biggest advocates, will see right through that. They'll see you as a social phony.
Yeah, I find it semantically clever that sometime in the history of developing the terminology for all these brand new tools that no one even knew about 6 years ago, that social and media were put together. And the reason I find it semantically clever is that because it's digitally social, it is, in the classic sense of being social, it's a misnomer, right? The two words shouldn't go together. Yet what it's done is reflect something I think I read in your most recent book on the Internet, which is it has allowed us to realize that it sort of, in a way, doesn't matter what the current generations think about fundraising 40 years from now. It matters that nearly every person who will be giving gifts 40 years from now is plugged in, and they feel socially connected because they look at their Blackberries or iPhones or Droids in a way that 20 years ago we would have thought, well, there's something social about looking at a little device and communicating with people who might be across the room and you're not even speaking.
Right. Predictions very early on with the Internet is that they would draw people apart, that, you know, people would be isolated if they were using the Internet. And in fact, what we've seen is that through social networking, through social media, whichever phrase you want to use, the root of it is social. And it's the ability to connect to people, things, and causes that you care about. And what I always share in my lectures is that it's almost as if social media, social networking was created uniquely for nonprofit organizations because this is what we've always done. And now we have the digital interconnected way to do exactly what we've always wanted to do, and that is connect people that are like-minded, who care about similar things, to come together and to make great things happen.
Yeah, and absolutely. And as an example of this, at least anecdotally, I've seen and I've had others comment to me that LinkedIn, as a social networking site geared toward professionals, it really is heavily leveraged by nonprofits. So both for professional interaction and networking, but also for things like prospect research, because you know, Ted and I, if you looked at our LinkedIn information. We essentially have our bios from a professional standpoint on a site that therefore gives you the story of our, at least, career. And then if you're a relationship builder, you could probably find a couple launching points to build a relationship off of some new information that you've gained. So, of course, there's some privacy issues. There's some personal issues of how does it make people feel. But it's likely not going to go away. And so I do think that nonprofits need to seize the day, make sure they do it in a way that doesn't distract from raising more money from their current base and so forth. But, you know, I don't think we can ignore any of these tools, like you mentioned.
No, absolutely not. Chris, I'm just going to take the opportunity for our listeners, those of you who are new, you'll be hearing this for the first time. Those who have been around for a while have heard this before. But since you just brought up such an important point, I want to drive that home by reminding our listeners of our five pillars of social media success. That first being a well-designed website, easy to navigate, full of unique content of your organization. The second most important online tool for nonprofits today, I believe, is GuideStar, and the third being LinkedIn, followed by Facebook, Causes, and Juno, and then Twitter. And not necessarily in that order, but mostly in that order in terms of importance. And that the reason why I share that so often is, first of all, I think it's true. Second of all, it's also about phasing these things, that not everybody's going to have all the tools up and running all at once, and it's not even a matter of just building it. It's how you use it and how you build it around relationships. And what you just said is so important. LinkedIn is an incredibly powerful tool for nonprofit organizations, particularly for prospecting, because of who uses that site, and that's high net worth individuals, foundations, and corporate executives. They're there, and that's what's important. Chris, I'm just going to share a few upcoming notes notices here for you and for our listeners. Just to note that on Earth Day this year, we announced the launch of a new monthly magazine. So in addition to the weekly nonprofit coach radio show, we now have a monthly nonprofit green show. And this month for May, the green show is this Friday, May 20th. You can find all the information at tedhart.com. Click on radio links, and you'll be able to find all the information about the Green Show. You can also find it as a partnership with greennonprofits.org, and so you'll find everything posted there as well. And green tech expert Jim Lynch will be on the show this week. And a little bit of a hint for all of our listeners who may want to listen in at 1 o'clock on May 20th, this Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern, someone is going to get a $100 Kiva credit this Friday. So listen in. Next week here on the Nonprofit Coach is one of our favorite nonprofit supporters, and that is Kendall Webb will be here from JustGive.org, terrific website, one that we feel that all nonprofits should be aware of. And so Kendall's going to be bringing us up today on what's latest and greatest of online giving, and that's May 24th next week here on the Nonprofit Coach. Chris, this book that you've written is really, it's so succinct and it's so easy to use. It's also sort of a nice little size that, you know, that you can carry along with you, or of course it's available on Kindle as well. But this book could not have been written 10 years ago, could it?
No, and actually, while some of the principles, I suspect, are immutably similar for decades and decades, at least half of the content didn't have a context even a decade ago. So the social media components, the reporting components, the fact that almost everyone in a fundraising role right now has a computer more powerful than the one they had 10 years ago that happens to be in their pocket, that they can, you know, look at while they're on the train for their commute. All of these things have potentially changed the way that fundraising happens. I going back to that initial point, though, the reason for this book is to remind folks that they want their operations to work so well, to spin like a top, such that they can go and build relationships and be really strategic with their limited time. So that part hasn't changed, but the ways that you can become even more efficient and productive, more and more tools for that. And it's an exciting time and something that, who knows, one of these days maybe there will be a second version of the book because there will be so many new things to write about.
Well, and that's what's so interesting here on the Nonprofit Coaches. Of course, we cover all topics related to the nonprofit sector, heavily focused on those new emerging tools and techniques of social media and online fundraising. But online fundraising, social media, website, and the internet affects every aspect of fundraising. And if it's not integrated into everything that you do, then you are missing the opportunity to really add efficiency. And isn't that really the sort of the heart and soul of what this book is all about, in that you lead with data, follow with technology, you move on to reporting and processes and of course people, is that this is really about being efficient, because fundraising operations today need to generate more money and they're under pressure for budgets to do it with less.
Yeah, so if I would state it directly, I would say that every person in a fundraising and philanthropy organization, every person should try to figure out every day how could they generate the biggest return on their own time investment to generate more relationships and more dollars. And for fundraising executives, that tends to mean making sure the operation works well enough that then they can go talk to their best donors and their board members. For the operations folks, of course, it means take a look at this book and then, you know, all of your experts in the technologies you're using and so forth, and make sure that it's really leveraged and it's meaningfully leveraged, that it's not that the ends and the means aren't mixed up, which I think is, from an operations perspective, that, you know, we hold the database sacrosanct in such a way that we forget that we want to use that information and leverage it so that we can raise more money.
Absolutely, and that's what's so important. Chris Cannon, CFRE, thank you so much for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach. This is a terrific book that you bring to us through the AFP Wiley book series. I want to encourage all of our listeners today to go and get a copy of this book either on Amazon or AFP's website as an opportunity, or I guess they can go to Wiley.com as well. Just as we wrap up here, Chris, tell our listeners how they can reach you. How can they reach out to Chris Cannon?
The best way to reach me is at through BWF.com, my company, Venezuela's Western. My email address is ccannon, C-C-A-N-N-O-N, at BWF, that's boywhalefrank.com.
Terrific. Chris, thank you again. This has been a terrific show. I love the book, An Executive's Guide to Fundraising Operations, Principles, Tools, and Trends, printed by John Wiley and brought to us by Chris Cannon, CFRE. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week. We will be right back here next week here on the Nonprofit Coach.